This is number 0066, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0066. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Mark Blatt, who is the author of a mystery which I think has the world's best title, Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. So, which came first, the story or the title?
The title came first. I had a meeting with a senior police detective, and I said to him, you know, what's your mindset going into an investigation? And he said, Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. I said, that sounds like a good title for a book. You mind if I use it? He said, absolutely not. So I wish I could claim that I thought of it, but I thought of using it as a title.
Actress Sally Brooks is a new character on the NBC comedy Outsourced. What's it like to join a show that is already on the air?
Well, it's great, actually, because everybody's so open to new ideas, and everybody's very available and excited to be working on something like this, where it's fresh and interesting and something that nobody's really seen before. So it's fantastic, and the writers are available with new line readings right on the spot, and they're also open to improvisation. And Matt Walsh, who plays Jerry Stern, who's been on it pretty much from the beginning, is an incredible improviser. He's one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade, which he founded with Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, and Ian Roberts. So he's incredible to work with. He's just really quick on his feet and a really giving actor. So I feel very, very fortunate to be working with him.
Stuart Nullman has another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. On this edition of Book Banter, we'll look at the story behind the classic Marx Brothers film Duck Soup with Hail, Hail, Euphoria, and other books by the Marx Brothers, and books that focus on a single classic movie. All of this coming soon to a local theater near you. Next on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0066, is Pat Dillon Moore, host of Boom Boom Time on CKUT, and also a publicist with the NFB, the National Film Board. Also, she's one of the stars of a really classic film from 1986 called Sitting in Limbo. It's an NFB film. If you ever get a chance to see it, check it out. That is a really, really good film, and she's really, really good in it. Thank you very much, Pat, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, we start off with a story from Washington, Pennsylvania. Police in a southwestern Pennsylvania township said they've recovered one of two rings a man swallowed after he allegedly stole them from his mother and are waiting for his digestive system to produce the other. 53-year-old Robert Spriggs was charged with theft for allegedly stealing the rings valued at $30,000 each while visiting his 81-year-old mother. Police said Spriggs swallowed one that he had in his pocket during questioning and had previously swallowed the other ring. Spriggs is in the Washington County Jail in a cell, which, by the way, does not have a flushable toilet. So, there you go. If you think that's odd, here is one that's right out of the Twilight Zone. Police in ex-Soviet Georgia have been left guessing by the mysterious disappearance of two shepherds and their entire flock of 600 sheep. Police failed to find any trace of the two shepherds, brothers Koba and Sulukan Arabuli, who vanished with their dogs and the sheep on Sunday near a village on Georgia's border with Azerbaijan. Many rural communities in Georgia continue to use traditional methods of rearing sheep, with shepherds guiding their flocks through pastures and mountains on journeys that can sometimes take weeks or months. But these guys and their 600 sheep just vanished. Gee, I hope nothing bad happened to them. Sorry, couldn't resist that one. Okay, here's your pro tip of the day. No matter how much it seems like a good idea at the time, getting your girlfriend's name tattooed on your neck can backfire. Bad enough if you break up, then you're stuck with it. Even worse if she doesn't like the fact that you're stuck with it and tries to slice her name off your neck with a knife. In Lincoln, Nebraska, police say a 19-year-old woman and her 30-year-old boyfriend had gotten into a dispute. That led to her trying to cut off the tattoo. Fortunately, the boyfriend suffered only minor injuries, mostly scratches. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that that relationship is probably over. Just a guess on my part. That's all I'm saying. Okay, in Lewiston, Idaho, the guy who allegedly robbed the Cedars Inn clearly didn't think out his plan in advance. It took police all of 15 minutes to locate and arrest 40-year-old Donald Mosley Jr. after allegedly walking into the hotel and demanding cash from the desk clerk. That's because after the holdup, he went next door to a bar, ironically called The Alibi, and had a drink. Crime is clearly not Mosley's strong suit, as this is the second time he's been arrested in recent weeks. In late October, police claim he called in a fake fire report after he was declined a free cup of coffee at the Lewiston Fire Station. Boy, the Lewiston Fire Station must have some really good coffee. That's all I'm saying. Okay, a French duck farmer has been given a one-month suspended sentence and fined 500 euros, that's about 680 bucks US, after feeding cannabis to his bird, saying it's an excellent dewormer. The farmer, from a village on France's Atlantic coast, admitted that he smoked some of the drug himself, but that most of it was given to his 150 ducks for medicinal purposes. "There's no better deworming substance for them. A specialist advised me to do it," said the farmer, Michel Rouillet. He said that without being able to identify the specialist in question. "This is for real. Not one duck has worms, and they're all in excellent health," said Rouillet's lawyer, Jean Pillot, in an effort to convince the court. Police arrested Rouillet after discovering 12 cannabis plants and around 5 kilos, or 11 pounds, of the drug in a bag during a visit to his home following a theft. "It's the first time we've heard something like this," said the police. Wonder what the ducks want to eat when they have the munchies. Anyway, finally on this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest on this program, from our continuing How to Get into Hell series, lesson number 483, put on a priest's robe, enter a Catholic church, then steal money from the donation box. Yes, in Jackson, Michigan, police arrested a 52-year-old man who did just that. The fake priest stole an undisclosed amount of money and checks from St. John Catholic Church. Witnesses helped identify the man, who was arrested at his home, but police have not released the suspect's name. They say he is on parole and remains held at the Jackson County Jail pending parole violation and larceny charges. And there's a special place in hell for him later on. Time will tell. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Mark Blatt is someone you would call a multi-hyphenate. He is a Grammy Award-winning songwriter, and he also is the author of a hip-hop noir mystery, which has one of the best titles I've ever heard. The book is called Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. We had him on the old show a little over a year ago when the book came out in hardcover. Well, it's just been released in paperback, so I thought it would be good to have him back. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Peter. Great. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you again, too. A couple of weeks ago, I was watching the part of the event going on with Jon Stewart in Washington, D.C.
I was down there.
Were you down there?
Yeah, it was fun.
Okay, so I saw a sign that said Humpty Dumpty was pushed.
He was.
You weren't near that sign, were you?
No, I wasn't near that sign.
Okay. Because
there were so many people there, we couldn't get close. It was fabulous.
So I thought of you. Either someone's read your book, someone's doing promotion for your book, or...
Yeah, we paid that guy $2 million for one sign.
Now, as I mentioned, the book is just coming out in paperback, but there's also something else that's happening with the book, if I'm not mistaken. It's potentially being made into a film of some sort?
Yeah, that's right. Raymond D. Felita, who wrote and directed the hit movie City Island with Rachel Margolyes and Juliana Margolyes and Andy Garcia picked up the option and has been working on the screenplay. Yeah, it's fabulous.
Excellent. Now, as I said, it's one of the greatest titles I've ever seen or heard, but explain the story of the film.
Of the book. It's complicated. It's a murder mystery. It takes place in Manhattan, and it's been called the first wonderful hip-hop noir. It's a murder mystery, but it's also a social commentary. So one of the critics said it's a cross between Bonfire of the Vanities and Pulp Fiction. A lot of action and a lot of philosophy. So I don't know. Since we spoke, it was picked one of the best books of 2009 by Mostly Fiction, and it was picked one of the best mysteries by January Magazine 2009. So it's been doing great.
Chicken or egg question: which came first, the concept and idea for the story of the book or the title?
Well, that's really funny that you asked me that, because the working title for the new book is called First Came the Egg. So you're ahead of me, man. The title came first. I had a meeting with a senior police detective, and I said to him, you know, what's your mindset going into an investigation? And he said, Humpty Dumpty was pushed. I said, that sounds like a good title for a book. You mind if I use it? He said, absolutely not. So I wish I could claim that I thought of it, but I thought of using it as a title.
Oh, sounds great. Now, I mentioned earlier in the introduction that you are a multi-hyphenate, and you're also a Grammy Award-nominated songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Mention the song, because it's a great tune.
Okay, well, thank you. I just realized, you know, I've been trying to figure out ways to hype myself. You know, obviously all authors are. And I realized that the song title was a clue in the New York Times crossword puzzle, which I forgot. I'd forgotten about that. But the song is When She Was My Girl, and it was a number one record by the Four Tops. So, yeah.
So how does one...
In fact, I can tell you a funny story about that.
Yep.
We were at a book fair, and I wanted to meet Tavis Smiley. And he was there with Cornel West, the, philosopher, writer, head of African-American studies at Princeton. And they were on the stage, and afterwards Tavis came down into the audience. And so I introduced myself. I said, Tavis, I'm Mark Blatt. I had just been on a big show in the United States that he was on as well, so I thought maybe he would recognize me. But he's like, completely, you know, huh? Kind of like that. I'm like, Mark Blatt, yeah, I wrote this book called Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. He's like, And then I said, well, I wrote When She Was My Girl for the Four Tops. And he screams up to Cornell, check this guy out, Cornell. It's Mark Blatt. And he wrote the Four Tops at When She Was My Girl. And then Cornell came over to me and actually bowed down in front of me. I was like, man, crazy, you know? So... what can I tell you?
So how does one go from writing Grammy nominated pop tunes to writing a novel? It's like using different parts of the brain in a way, is it not?
Right, it is. I think it's fear. Fear. You got to make a living, you know, and you got to keep doing it. And what had happened is we were traveling, my wife and I, and I wasn't a writer then. That was like 6 or 7 years ago. And we'd go to all these odd places. We'd be in the middle of China on a boat, and I'd write back, you know, these crazy stories about, you know, being in China in the middle of a boat or being in South America on the border of Uruguay and Brazil and running into somebody, an American, on a motorcycle. And we speak neither Portuguese or Spanish, so we're just kind of trying to get around. And so I would write these stories, and My cousin Ken Kalfas is a writer for the New York Times Book Review and also a Penn Faulkner finalist and a Guggenheim winner. I mean, he's a very, very serious writer, and he was getting these emails from me, and when I saw him, he said, you know, you should write a book. So I was like, wow, if you think I should write a book, maybe I should. And I said, well, how do I start? And he said, well, you just start and then you finish it. So I said, oh, okay, all right. And I started, and it took me 5 years to finish, but I got it done. So with his encouragement, that's really how it got done.
And earlier when I mentioned The Egg, you said that's the title of a next book. So you are obviously writing another one?
Mm-hmm. It's a sequence to this book, the sequel to this one. And we've been struggling with titles. My wife suggested The Egg Came First, and I just thought it was brilliant. We're running with that one right now.
Now, I understand you mentioned traveling. I understand you divide your time between New York City, which is where you are now, and Nicaragua?
That is true. And actually, if you want to see exactly where we are in Nicaragua, watch Survivor. The next 2 years have been shot at the beach just next to ours in Nicaragua. So we spend about 4 months a year down there. Yep. We've got a house down there. We've got a windmill. It's sort of in the middle of nowhere, and except I guess now it's been made famous by the Survivor show, and we're planning to go down there in January. Mm-hmm.
So where do you do most of your writing, in New York or Nicaragua?
Yeah, in New York. It's hard to write in Nicaragua. It's too beautiful. You just want to sit there, and the rum is too good. So basically, you just kind of want to sit there and look at the water and watch the whales, hang out with the Canadians. There are a lot of Canadians around.
Right.
Wherever it's cold, you know, I mean, wherever it's warm, you'll find Canadians, and they're, you know, they're just great to party with. So really, there's not much chance of getting anything done. But when you come back into Manhattan and everybody is hustling and everything like that, that's when you can get the writing done. Yeah.
The book is called Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. It's now out in paperback, and as you mentioned, it's going to be turned into a film. Now, is this for the big screen?
Yes, it is. It is. The movie that Ray did, City Island, was the audience favorite, the Tribeca Film Award, you know, the film festival. And then it's being made into a TV pilot. And, you know, his plans are for Humpty to kind of have a big star. And his last movie, as I said, was Andy Garcia and Juliana Margulies. So, yeah, he wants to go for it. And I'm sure he'll get it done. He's pretty amazing.
Excellent. Well, again, Mark Blatt is the author of Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. And Mark, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Oh, Peter, it's a pleasure. And if you see Paul Provenza, my old friend and my childhood friend, please give him my love.
I will do. We've had Paul on the show, and he's usually here in Montreal every year for Just for Laughs.
He's right. Always has been.
Mark Blatt, author of Humpty Dumpty Was Pushed. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0066, and you will find links to Mark's site and also links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet one of the stars of the television series on NBC called Outsourced. Plus, we have Stuart Nelman and another edition of Book Bander. And of course, there is an idiot of the day. But right here, more stuff for your listening pleasure. In Los Angeles, 22-year-old Mario Francisco Hernandez had found the love of his life. And so he went the uber-romantic route and painted the words, "Will you marry me?" on his car as a novel way to pop the question to his girlfriend. Isn't that sweet? Doesn't it get you right behind the old ballpoint? Oh, yes. Well, unfortunately, she said no, which apparently was quite upsetting to Mr. Hernandez. He responded by allegedly trying to run her down with his car in a Burger King restaurant parking lot. Instead of popping the question, he popped two tires on his 1987 Toyota Supra when he jumped the curb to catch the unidentified woman. Hernandez and the woman have two young children together, and he was arrested on a felony charge of assault with a deadly weapon. Something tells me that relationship is over. Yet another reason why sometimes America scares me. Times are still tough if you're a car dealership, so you've got to look for every possible marketing angle if you want to stay alive. Now, in Sanford, Florida, Nations Trucks has launched an unusual promotion, a free AK-47 rifle for every truck purchased. No, really. Nations Trucks promises to pay for a Soviet-style assault rifle for anyone who buys one of its used trucks. And yes, it's working quite well. The dealership has more than doubled sales since the offer was announced just last week, according to Nick Janetta, the general sales manager. A poster in Nations' office window proclaims free AK-47 above a large illustration of the gun. Janetta said his dealership does not hand out guns itself, but gave customers a $400 voucher, which could be redeemed for a rifle at a local firearm shop. And Janetta says, "I don't think it sends the wrong message," insisting instead that the dealership is merely allowing customers to assert their rights under the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Like I said, sometimes the United States scares me. And while on that note, in Madison, Vermont, 67-year-old Stephen Cowan was so enraged by Bristol Palin's Dancing with the Stars routine that he blasted his television with a shotgun, leading to an all-night standoff with a SWAT team. Cowan was finally arrested after officers coaxed him out of his house. He's now accused of threatening his wife with a gun after destroying the television. His wife, Janice Cowan, told investigators that her husband suffers from bipolar disorder and had threatened her life in the past. Gee, I wonder if he's going to buy a truck from Nations Trucks. Anyway, she also said he was upset that a political figure's daughter was dancing on TV, even though he felt that she didn't have talent. Apparently, he's not the only one who feels that way. The internet has been abuzz in recent days about how Bristol Palin, who has consistently landed at the bottom of the judges' leaderboard, has been able to remain on the ABC show. Some have suggested that voters, particularly those supporting her mother, have been voting in blocks and manipulating the system. No. Really? No. Anyway, there is no secret that the Japanese love their porn. And as it turns out, about 20% of Japan's adult video market is now what's called elder porn, naughty movies with one or more studly seniors. One of the biggest senior porn stars is 76-year-old Shigeo Takuda, who says he still performs without Viagra and at least one film a month opposite much younger women. Even more amazing, his wife and adult daughter only learned 2 years ago by accident of his late onset career, which began at the age of 60 after a filmmaker hired him for his pervert's face. And I'd like to know exactly what a pervert's face looks like, but anyway. Takuda believes the elder porn genre will grow with Japan's increasing senior population. Well, nothing like a growth industry, huh? Okay, moving right along, here's another pro tip for you, boys and girls. If someone offers to give you a free breast exam in a bar, they are probably not a real doctor, even if they are a woman. In Boise, Idaho, police arrested Christina B. Ross after they say she impersonated a plastic surgeon and conducted breast exams on at least two women in local bars. Police say the scam came to light after a real doctor's office began getting calls from prospective patients who wanted to see a Dr. Berlin Aussie Ashwona, but no doctor by that name worked at the office. After a little investigating, police identified the 37-year-old Ross, who isn't licensed to practice medicine. Detectives say they fear there may be others who had fake exams. There you go. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, a New York 19-year-old accused of shoving a turkey breast into his pants at a grocery store told a newspaper he took a sandwich but denied stealing the breast. Dion Williams turned down a plea deal with a 6-month jail sentence for the robbery charge, claiming he was falsely accused of shoving the 12-pound boar's head turkey breast into his pants and attempting to smuggle it out of Fine Fare supermarket. "I didn't do it," Williams said. "Okay, I stole a cold-cut sandwich because I was hungry, but I put everything else back." Everything else? So there's more than the turkey breast? Anyway, prosecutors allege Williams left the store with the turkey in his pants and was chased down by the butcher, who demanded he hand over the breast. Williams allegedly placed the turkey on the ground and punched the butcher in the jaw. So, there you go. Turkey is such a dry meat, though. I don't know if I'd want that thing back after it was down that guy's pants, however. But that's just me. Let's move along to our next guest, shall we, here on the Stuff File program? Sally Brooks is a very busy Hollywood actress. She's been in everything from The Bernie Mac Show to The Mentalist, Cold Case, Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, and Monk. She now has a new role. Sally has joined the cast of NBC's new comedy, Outsourced, as Nancy Stern. Sally is on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Sally.
Hello.
Nice to have you on the show. So I guess right now you're playing basically the boss's wife. Is that how it works?
That's exactly right.
Tell us about the role. Tell us about the role of Nancy Stern.
Well, when we meet Nancy, she and her husband are in couples counseling, so they're having a little bit of a rocky patch. But they clearly love each other, and they've learned to live with each other for a long time.
Now, this is a relatively new show, but you didn't join it at the very beginning. You only joined it partway through. What's it like? First of all, how many episodes are you signed to do?
Right now, 3.
And what's it like joining a show that's already in production?
Well, it's great, actually, because everybody's so open to new ideas, and everybody's very available and excited to be working on something like this, where it's fresh and interesting and something that nobody's really seen before. So it's fantastic, and the writers are available with new line readings right on the spot, and they're also open to improvisation. And Matt Walsh, who plays Jerry Stern, who's been on it pretty much from the beginning, is an incredible improviser. He's one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade, which he founded with Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, and Ian Roberts. So he's incredible to work with. He's just really quick on his feet and a really giving actor. So I feel very, very fortunate to be working with him.
Now, I mentioned earlier some of the credits of the work you have done. It includes both comedy and drama. Do you have a preference?
I really like comedy. I think if I had, like, gun to my head, had to make a choice, I would probably choose comedy, but I feel really fortunate that I've been able to do both and discover that I really enjoy the drama as well. I guess I didn't know that at first. I came out here with more of a comedy bend, I guess, and then I wound up getting some dramatic roles and really, really love that as well. But I tend to lean towards the comedy a little bit.
As an actress, how do you avoid getting typecast from one to the other? And by that I mean sometimes there are casting agents out there who say, oh, she does comedy, and then others who say, oh, she does drama, and never the twain shall meet.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. It's a good question. I think it's a double-edged sword. I think sometimes it works to your advantage to not be typecast and be able to play the wide variety of roles, which has been my case. But I think in some instances, it's actually a better thing to be typecast because the roles that you get are sort of consistent and they know what to do with you. So it's about the actor finding how to make that work for themselves.
Now, you're on a show that is getting some really good numbers and is doing well on Thursday night and on NBC, but it also has received a certain amount of criticism even before it went on the air because of the subject matter. Does that concern you at all, or have you talked to the staff about that? Are they getting past that, or is
yeah,
it a bone
I mean,
of contention?
I don't know a lot about that. I did hear there were some grumblings, but I think that the impression that people had before it aired versus the truth of what the show is about are pretty different. They're not exactly, I think, what people had expected. This is sort of a fish out of water situation, a culture clash, a guy trying to find his way in a foreign country, and them learning about a little bit about our culture and us learning a little bit about theirs.
Now, because the show takes place in India and you were married to the boss back in the United States, I'm guessing as a character, you don't get a chance to interact with a lot of the staff or the other characters. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Like, I see them in passing or, you know, in hair and makeup or at a table read. But, yeah, we don't always work on the same days. Or if we do, we have our schedule because it's a single camera is not exactly the same. That is true.
So do you almost feel sometimes like you're on this show, but you're not part of the cast?
I don't know. I don't really look at it like that. I feel really just grateful to be a part of it. So, you know, I don't really feel like I'm not a part of it, but I also feel like I'm brand new to it too. So sort of just being very respectful of the setting that they've already created for themselves. And I'm just kind of, you know, a guest at this point. So I feel included. Everybody's been very warm and very inviting and made me feel really comfortable.
You're working in Hollywood. You're originally from, if I'm not mistaken, Ohio.
Correct.
So how does an Ohio girl end up in Hollywood?
On an airplane. I just always wanted to be a part of the entertainment industry. I went to New York when I was a little girl and I fell in love with it and knew that that's where I wanted to live and that's where I went first. And I spent about a year or two there, did some regional theater and some commercials. And then I wound up here sort of backwards situation. I didn't plan to move out here. I came to visit and one thing led to another and then I started working and I stayed. So it was sort of fortuitous.
You were a drama major, correct?
I was.
The transition from stage to in front of the camera, easy or difficult?
Difficult. And now I find the same to be true the other way. When I go to do theater, I have to remember, you know, it's just a different medium. But difficult's not quite the right word, but it's definitely a different set of skill sets and something you have to sort of hone your craft on and remind yourself what it is that's different about being in front of a camera. And the thing that I think helped me the most was commercial work, because I did so many commercials and got a chance to be in front of a camera and learn what was working and what wasn't working that I think it translated to my theatrical career. When I say theatrical, I mean episodic work.
Do you find that being a theater major and having done the stage is something that helps an actor who works in front of the camera? Because, you know, as you know, there are a lot of people who have never had that stage experience.
Definitely. Yes, I think it helps a lot. I think anything that you can do to further yourself as an actress, to create a character, to make choices, to set yourself apart from just the lines on the page, to make it alive with personality and depth, and that's something that you learn in theater school.
And speaking of character, how do you enjoy playing the role of Nancy Stern? And by that, I mean, do you also have the opportunity to input your own thoughts beyond the written word or work with the writers to create Nancy Stern?
Yeah, I think that probably will happen. I mean, even from the audition process where, you know, you get a blurb, a breakdown of what the character is, and then to a certain degree, at least in this instance, you sort of have to put that aside, look at the words that are on the page and make choices based on what you bring to a character. So, for example, and I can't remember exactly what the breakdown said, but I'm just sort of paraphrasing here. If it's something like, you know, stern and cross and unhappy with her husband, that might not be exactly what plays for me at the audition, but they might be open to, well, obviously they are open to seeing what you bring.
Excellent.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes absolute sense. The role is Nancy Stern. It's played by Sally Brooks, and it can be seen on the television series Outsourced on NBC. I thank you very, very much, Sally, for taking the time to be on the program with us, and continued success with all that you do.
Thank you, Peter.
Sally Brooks from the NBC comedy Outsourced. The show airs on Thursday nights. Check your local listings. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, and you'll find links to the show and also links to Sally's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones. Is it a sign of the times or a change in our lawsuit-happy culture? Either way, there might be some hope for common sense. I just read a report about how so many law school students today are having a tough time finding jobs. In fact, a newspaper recently published a letter from a student who's in his final year at a major law school. He wants the dean of the school to refund his entire tuition. The student says he and many of his fellow law students can't find a job. Of course, he believes this is a problem, but many others, including me, think this might not be such a bad thing. Let's be fair. I believe law is an honorable profession, and I have a lot of friends who are lawyers. But just how many lawyers do we need? If the job market for them has gotten so bad that law students want to drop out of school and get a refund, well, maybe they'll have to find other jobs. And maybe, just maybe, there'll be fewer lawsuits tomorrow. That'd be a good start. Go to my website at bobdirigojones.com.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Abidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
Hello, Peter, and hail, hail, Fredonia, land of the brave and free.
One of these days, you're going to have to put out your album. The vocal stylings of Book Banter's Stuart Nauman.
Well, as of Time Life is going to be doing it as an infomercial, yeah, fine, no problem. Just going to find, you know, who to get, what former star to do it, and an unknown, you know, to do that information. Well, we'll worry about that later. The reason I did this little fanfare of an introduction is because on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at a book about the Marx Brothers, in particular, one of their classic movies, Duck Soup. Now, I was introduced to the Marx Brothers accidentally 40 years ago. I went to go see H.R. Puff and stuff, and a friend of mine and his dad dragged me to see his Marx Brothers Festival at a downtown movie theater, and it was a day at the races, and I thought it was okay, but I was unimpressed. I mean, I'm just 7 years old. Never got to see Puff and stuff. But about 3 years later, on the old CBMT, the old CBC Channel 6 station here in Montreal, had a Marx Brothers Festival, a Sunday night movie for five consecutive Sundays in the spring. And when it got to the fifth movie, Duck Soup, I thought it was pretty darn funny, actually. And I was wondering, you know, what made it funny? Was it their anarchistic satire of governments and how they are governed, their mockery of how nations go to war? Was it Groucho's Cat and Mouse battles with Ambassador Trentino, the famous mirror sequence, or Harpo's playful dunking of his feet in Edward Kennedy's vat of lemonade, which still makes me convulse with laughter to this day? I think it was probably all those reasons and more. Now, American humorist and best-selling author Roy Blount Jr. is also a fan of Duck Soup. In fact, he goes as far as deeming it the greatest war movie ever made. And his appreciation of this classic movie comedy is quite evident in his new book called Hail, Hail, Euphoria. Now, you gotta ask yourself, can someone give a single comedy movie from Hollywood's golden age the type of reverential treatment in a single book? Well, after reading his treatment of Duck Soup, the answer is a resounding yes. Blount gives a virtual frame-by-frame, scene-by-scene examination of what makes Duck Soup such a classic. He recounts scenes to why they work so comically, especially his dissection of the hat exchange scene between Harpo, Chico, and Edgar Kennedy, to how some of Chico's memorable puns translate into French and yet doesn't lose its comic effect. However, this book is more than just an aesthetic dissection. His research into every aspect of this movie is what makes Hail, Hail, Euphoria work so well. Devoted Marx Brothers fans are in for a real treat into what Blount has discovered to tell the story of the making of Duck Soup. From the privilege of having veteran comedy director Leo McCarey helming the production, he worked with Laurel and Hardy before working with the Marx Brothers, the scenes that were deleted from the original treatment, including a media role for younger brother Zeppa, which probably prompted his retirement from the group in 1934, to the evolution of one of the film's most memorable routines, the mirror sequence with Groucho and Harpo, which was taken from a 1921 silent movie done by French comedian Max Linder. But no matter how well Duck Soup was put together, it was a box office failure when it was released in 1933. It forced Paramount Pictures, which was on the brink of bankruptcy at the time, not to renew the brothers' contract, and to add insult to injury, fascist Italian dictator Benito Mussolini banned the movie from cinemas across Italy and ordered his people not to laugh at their slapstick antics. I'd be put in prison if that was the case. However, with the disillusionment of the baby boomers towards the 60s and 70s, thanks to Vietnam and Watergate, Duck Soup experienced a revival of new generation of fans, which continues to reverberate to this day. Now, Hail, Hail, Euphoria is a welcome new addition to the many books that have been written about the Marx Brothers over the past 60 years, and to the single film that carries more meaning thematically and symbolizes the Marx's unique anti-establishment sense of humor more than any of the 13 films they did as a team. And, you know, these days, with people more cynical towards how governments in the Western world are run, especially with troops risking their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan year after year, the comic misadventures of Rufus T. Firefly, Ciccolini, and Pinky in the mythical authoritarian kingdom of Fredonia matters even more to us right now.
Now, I know, as you mentioned at the beginning, that you're a major Marx Brothers fan, so I certainly am sure that you can recommend other Marx Brothers books, because you probably have them all.
Yeah, I do. Well, there's so many. There's if you want an autobiographical, go read Groucho's Groucho and Me, that was released in 1959. Harpo's book, Harpo Speaks, which was published in 1961, is still available, and I think is a fantastic autobiography. If you want a more objective look at Groucho, read Stephen Kamfer's book, Groucho, The Life and Times of Julius Henry Marx. And also, I want to go back about almost 40 years. There was a gentleman, Richard J. Anobile, who did a book around 1971 called Why a Duck? Which what he did was he took some of the Marx Brothers' best-known films and took some of the more visual and verbal gems of them and put them into book form, a bit of a frame-by-frame with all the dialogue in there. So it started really – helped create that Marx Brothers boom in the early 70s, and did his own series of books called the Film Classics Library, which he took several classic movies and put them all into book form. And in the days before VCRs and VHS – it was virtually had the whole movie in your hand. So I do recommend Why Duck and anything else that Richard J. Noble did, especially co-authored with Groucho the Marx Brothers scrapbook in 1973. So basically, these books I'm putting on a treasure hunt. So you're going to have to find them in your secondhand bookstores or go through eBay. But I recommend these books very highly.
And the current book we just talked about today is, again?
Hail, Hail, Euphoria by Roy Blount Jr., presenting the Marx Brothers and Duck Soup, the greatest war movie ever made by Roy Blount Jr., published by It Books. It's an imprint of HarperCollins, and it's $22.95.
And how can people find you, Stuart Nolman, and Book Banter?
Well, you can read me in the West End Times, but if you can't get a paper copy, you can see me online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Well, you bet your life, Peter. See you next week. Next time, actually.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on the Stuff File program.
The Stuff File.
And we're nearing the end of this edition of The Stuff File program. We have some more Stuff File stories for you, but I just want to mention very quickly, The Stuff File store is open. You can go to the Stuff File store. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and you'll find all kinds of Stuff File gear, t-shirts, caps, mugs, water bottles, tote bags, teddy bears, everything you want just in time for Christmas, great stocking stuffers, or just stuff for you. And it helps to support this show. So we all win. Hint, hint, just in time for Christmas makes great stocking stuffers. Check it out, the Stuff File store at thestufffile.com. Okay, back to some of the Stuff File news before we get to our idiot of the day. Colleen Frabel was upset when she got home from work and found her unemployed boyfriend, Darren Shushan, who's 42, had spent the entire day playing video games. The next day, when she left for work, she took the PlayStation console with her. As she drove down the highway through Lehigh Township, Pennsylvania, she noticed her own Porsche gaining on her, with Darren at the wheel, flailing his arms trying to get her to stop. He allegedly forced her off the road twice and rammed her at a stoplight, all in an attempt to get the game back. She didn't relent, and she called 911. Darren was charged with assault, reckless endangerment, harassment, disorderly conduct, reckless driving, and, wait for it, because it always happens in these stories, driving with a suspended or revoked license. There you go. And he was held on $25,000 bail. How long do you think that relationship will last? Meanwhile, an unnamed 21-year-old man from Uniontown, Pennsylvania, called police to report that what he had bought on the street and believed was marijuana tasted nasty and asked police to come check it out for him. Detective Donald Gmitner said a field test kit showed the material was not marijuana, but more likely a kitchen spice. The man wasn't arrested because, unfortunately, plain old stupidity by itself isn't a crime. And the lone survivor of a crash of a LET L410 turbolet airliner in the Democratic Republic of Congo says the accident was caused by the passengers. A man had a crocodile hidden in his luggage, and the reptile escaped just as the plane was descending to land at Bunbandu. The terrified air hostess hurried towards the cockpit, according to an investigative report, followed by the passengers. That put the aircraft off balance. The plane crashed, killing 20 passengers and crew. The only survivor besides the one passenger was, of course, the crocodile. But locals responding to the crash killed it. Meanwhile, Rob Thomas, a cell phone salesman for Verizon Wireless in Trotwood, Ohio, was standing in the store when customer Joanne Famel came in. "If I hadn't jumped over the counter, I'd be dead," Thomas said. "You can see the burns on the carpet." Oh, did we forget to mention that Famel was still inside her SUV when she came into the store? Yeah. It came crashing through the store's window. Famel's 16-year-old grandson was at the wheel and hit the gas instead of the brake as they approached the store. Famel stepped to the counter and paid her bill, and then took over the wheel and backed the vehicle out the way it came in. Isn't that nice? Yeah. And for School Spirit Week, Dan DePaulis, age 17, a senior at Hamilton Wenham Regional High School in Hamilton, Massachusetts, dressed up as a knight and rode his father's horse, Pierre, around the school, led by a classmate dressed as a squire. Minutes into the ride, the high school's associate principal put a stop to it, suspending DePaulis on the spot for 2 days and his squire for one, said Dan's father, Ron. Even though the horse was calm, under control, and walking at a slow pace, the school administrator told my son it was the equivalent of bringing in a loaded firearm to school. Really? Hey, the horse is only a loaded firearm depending on what it eats. Amazingly, when the horse turned around, nobody could tell Pierre apart from that idiot associate principal. Some people, I tell you. Okay, in Hydro, Oklahoma, 73-year-old Edwin Fry was not too happy about being ordered to pay a $100 fine for not having his prize poodle Buddy on a leash. So Ed decided to bust Buddy out of the city pound by driving his riding mower down to the pound in the middle of the night and using bolt cutters to break into Buddy's cage. But as the pair tried to make their way back to Ed's home, they were intercepted by police officer Christopher Chancellor, who said, "I've been in law enforcement 20 years, and this is the first time I've known anyone to bust a dog out of jail." As a result, Edwin spent several days in jail himself and faces a municipal charge of allowing an animal to run at large. He never denied the charges and, in fact, said he warned police to stay away from his dog unless they wanted to face his shotgun. As for Buddy, he was euthanized while Fry was in jail. Yes. Anyway, 22-year-old British college student Christopher Brooker has made an interesting wager. He's betting that he'll still be with his girlfriend, 19-year-old Hannah Graham, when they graduate in 2 years. The young couple are attending Durham University, and he's taken a 6-to-1 odds bet with a local bookie that their love will last. Gambling on this sort of thing is actually legal over in Britain, and if they make it, Christopher's 100-pound bet will become 600 pounds. He came up with the idea after he and Hannah were talking about how it is especially difficult for students to make commitments to each other and spend time studying and also deal with extracurricular activities. Hannah said she was delighted by the act and added, "I thought it was a really lovely gesture. It was touching of him that he wanted to still be with me at graduation. I think we are doing quite well at the moment." There you go. We've had so many stories in the show today about couples who are obviously on the outs. It's nice to have one that's really betting on the idea that they'll still be together. In Paragould, Arkansas, Greene County Jail has a tough time keeping guards around. The jail is extremely outdated and has tremendous employee turnover. Maybe this is why. Three guards and a sheriff's deputy were doing a contraband search on inmate Dan Rodden's cell when Rodden suddenly ran out, shut the cell door, and inserted a safety pin, effectively locking the officers inside with the other inmates that they were searching. But this was not a well-thought-out plan, as Rodden then locked himself in a visitation booth. The four officers were rescued by a jail matron without incident, and Mr. Rodden has been placed in indefinite solitary lockdown. Sheriff Dan Langston chalked it up as a lack of training on his officer's part and says the officers won't be disciplined, presumably because they're out of fears that they'll just up and quit, like everyone else has at this jail. You know, a story like that is dangerously close to one that could make Idiot of the Day, but it didn't. Oh, but this one did.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
From the How Can You Possibly Think This Would Work files, we now take you to Houston, Texas, where 27-year-old Walter Allen Jr. allegedly tried to purchase two Bentleys with a $500,000 fake check from the Federal Reserve Bank in Atlanta. Allen was also dumb enough to use his real driver's license in the transaction and even brought along his own notary public to watch him sign the papers. Fortunately, the folks at Post Oak Motor Cars was a little smarter than that. Allen was trying to purchase a white $245,000 Bentley GTC and a black 2010 Bentley Flying Spur valued at $213,000. He was arrested at the dealership after making the deal and signing the check over. Managers at the dealership became suspicious mainly because the Federal Reserve Bank doesn't use checks. What a moron. Why would someone try to buy two cars with a fake $500,000 check? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0066. Hope you've enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And by going to thestufffile.com, you can find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0066. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And you can also find me at Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and on Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, aboard Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, Gold FM in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.